I had a religious experience this week, and I'm going to try to talk about it a little bit. My experience is that you can't really talk about religious experiences, but I'm going to try to stammer some of what happened, the commentary, and what it means. As part of Association Sunday, and as part of talking about what ministry is, and how important we are to each other. I read the Bible. I studied the Bible. I've taught passages of the Bible. Genesis 2 was always kind of interesting, and God breathed the spirit of life into the nostrils of Adam. And I was, of course, when I was 13-year-old, troubled by God breathing the spirit of life into the nostrils of Adam, because that implied that God had lips and lungs and breath, and I was taking it and rejecting it literally. There are two ways of being fundamentalist. Take it all and say yes, or take it all literally and say no. I've moved from that position. I lit a candle for Rabbi Roth, who is my rabbi. When I came back to Southern California in 1973 to serve the Unitarian Universalists, well, they were just the Unitarian Church in Studio City, we rented to Congregation Beth Orr, a Reconstructionist congregation. Reconstructionism in Judaism is pretty much Unitarianism. It says we're going to take our religion seriously without taking any of it literally, and you take what nourishes you. So the rabbi and I got along very nicely, and he has effectively been my rabbi for about 38 years. And I've attended his services and been influenced spiritually and intellectually by this very unique person. So I was sitting with his daughters, Lynn and Dina, during the services on Thursday, or Wednesday night, when after the sermon, where he talked about his spiritual journey, about how he started out in a very Orthodox home, and it made him crazy. He couldn't take the prayers literally. He couldn't take that God literally, and he started experimenting with thinking. And that moved him intellectually along. It was a remarkable sermon, particularly on Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the days of awe. And just when most of the service was done, and I should tell you that Michael is 91 years old, and he also would not appreciate having his age shared, he said, "Oh, I'm dizzy," turned white, stopped breathing, and his daughter and I got to him in about 15 seconds, got him on the ground, and were doing CPR because I could not discern a pulse at the carotid or at the wrist, and he wasn't breathing. So, I've never really kissed a rabbi before, and I had to think about it for a nanosecond, and Lynn was doing the compression, and I was doing the puffing, and then after about 2 minutes, because I'm larger and heavier, we switched, and she did the puffing, and I did the compressing, and he gurgled, and his pulse returned, and he started breathing. And the paramedics got there and said, "Do you know who are you?" "My name's Rabbi Michael Roth." "Where are you?" He said, "Unitarian Church." And they started looking confused. You can imagine the same thing happening here. You know, "Where are you?" "The Temple Beth Tikva." "Yeah, guy must be completely disoriented." Took him to the ER. He is back home resting comfortably. I want to tell you, it felt like a miracle. It was a profound experience. Everybody should learn CPR. It's very important. But it's only really effective in this way in about 20% of the cases, because there are some sudden death syndromes that are not amenable to being shocked or being restarted. This was probably ventricular tachycardia and arrhythmia. and not an infarction. But he's back and wants to do services again on Yom Kippur, which will make everybody very comfortable. But he is a remarkable human being. Fortunately, I paid attention to his sermons over the years, and so on Rosh Hashanah, I did the sharing of joys and sorrows, and I did the sounding of the shofar more completely than I did last week, and without turning the same terrible color, which is probably what did the rabbi in. And I did two of his sermons with full attribution. So when people came up and afterwards and complimented me on the sermons, I said, well, absolutely. They were terrific sermons. And they're looking like, who is this Amaz guy? They're the rabbi's sermons. I gave them, I as the kids say, I just covered them. I didn't write them. It's ultimate ministry that we have to each other. To give each other the kiss of life. To breathe spirit, physical and spiritual, into each other. To have the courage to kiss. To have the courage to take the chances and to try to choose nourishment and life and a gift. It's a reminder that we're not alone and how important it is not to be alone. If this arrhythmia had happened in the middle of the night, he would not have awakened. Somebody being there and seeing it, him not being alone, none of us being alone, and being able to depend not simply on the kindness of strangers, but more difficultly, on the kindness of each other, is so important. It's so important that we come together in communities, in families, in various kinds of associations, that we keep each other company on this precious and often all too brief journey that we have. It's important that we stop to hear the music. It's important that we know each other well enough for that kind of intimacy. On Association Sunday, we in our denomination understand a couple of things. One, in our congregations, as I indicated, we choose not to be alone. We choose to come together, not to find agreement, but to search together, to share together, to be informed by each other's searching, to learn from our mistakes, to learn from our triumphs, to be energized by each other, and literally the word courage, encouraged by each other as we work together and fight together and sing together to bring out of our various notes a sense of harmony. We give up something in coming together. We give up some good things in terms of freedom. We give up some football games on Sunday mornings. We give up opportunities to be elsewhere, and we give up a certain amount of the chaos and the freedom, and what we get for it is community, not community that is pre-made, not a religion that is one size fits all, but the opportunity to ask questions, to be searchers, to be workers, to be involved in an individual spiritual journey, but with good company while we are on our journeys. So we know in our congregations that we have strength by being together. We know in our movement, in our association, that it's exactly the same way. We are technically not a denomination. We are technically an association. And it's a technicality I have no interest in going into. But we're an association. We take our individual selves and come together in congregations. We take our congregations and we call them churches and societies and fellowships and congregations. And all different, we can't agree on what they are. We can't even agree on the name of the denomination, I'm sorry, of the association. They hate Unitarian Universalism. It doesn't fit on the marquee. It's way too long. And what does it mean? And there are people who say, well, maybe we should change it to the Odd Fellows because obvious reasons, but there's an intellectual property issue there. My friend Rob Isaacs of late of Whittier said we should be the Junitarian Buddhiversalists, which I always kind of liked, although I'm in favor at the moment, if we're going to change it, to be the Diversitarians. Because that's really part of our celebration, is that we want to make... Too often we're given this option. You're either a melting pot or you're a mosaic. I think we are a Creole stew, that the ingredients have their own integrity, but they share and blend and make something better and deeper and richer, because we are not the same politically, spiritually, religiously, or in terms of our traditions. We learn from each other and are enriched by each other without having to give up who we were. There's only one thing that you have to give up if you're going to be a Unitarian Universalist from your previous tradition, whether political or religious, and that is the idea that there's only one way and everybody else has got it wrong. We try to have a certain amount of humility and understand there is something to learn, good and bad, from every tradition, and we're responsible for our choices. We come together in an association. It's not top down. It is an association. Our congregations are radically congregationalist. You call your own ministers. You dismiss your own ministers. You select your own hymns. You create your own culture. We are not the same McDonald's serving the same menu in every one of our stores. We have political diversity. We have, God knows, style diversity. We have churches with ministers in shirts and with ministers in robes and choirs in robes. We have every kind of style, and we have really every kind of substance. If an average West Coast American Unitarian Universalist walks into King's Chapel in Boston and sees the Queen Anne, literally given by Queen Anne, silver communion plates, they could become a little confused. But it's part of who we are also. And so we are an association that understands that we pay our dues to an association and we take contributions for an association because they develop religious education curriculum, not that we have to use, but we can pick and choose. They train ministers and they don't tell you which one you have to have. The congregations choose the clergy. Our clergy are ordained by congregations, not by the association, not by apostolic succession and laying on of hands, but our congregations have the power of ordination. It is not top-down, it is bottom-up. And so what are our ministers? And why do we train them? And why do we have them? And why would anybody choose to be one? We've all asked those questions from time to time. And let me tell you what we're not. We're not experts at everything. We are the ultimate generalists. There are in the world better motivational speakers than I. There are more professional therapists. There are more professional, God knows, administrators and business consultants and all of the various things that ministers do can be done better, often, by a specialist. We're the ultimate generalists. We're not the bosses of the congregation. We don't work for the congregation. We work with the congregation. And the job of training is to try to develop areas of competency and sufficient competency that once we get to the congregations where the religion takes place, is that we're able to learn and grow and find our skills and ourselves and work out the kind of relationship with people that allows us to work together and to grow together. Every minister that I have ever met has strong points and weak points. Just as we don't stamp our congregations out like McDonald's, we don't stamp out our clergy. We are all backgrounds. We are all races. We are all theologies. We are all speakers sometimes and counselors at other times. Some have great specialties in music. Some don't. And as human beings, our theology of ministry is really important. We are not priests with the intermediaries between you and God, even if we add however you may understand that word. We are also not bosses. We are fellow searchers, the great generalists who try to stammer a sense of connection to the great questions with which we all of every denomination wrestle. We are there to keep each other company, to try to model ministry, and as I was saying to all of you, and particularly Eleanor, to understand failure as part of it. Failure that leads to learning. Comment was made last Sunday that was a compliment to the sermon with the addition, well, you know, they're not all great. And the answer is, of course not. One of my great mentors, the late and wonderful Brandy Lovely of Neighborhood Church in Pasadena, said, John, if your sermons are consistent, they're mediocre. Because you will never have excellence if you don't reach and try to fly and sometimes fall, fail, and flop. That's so important. It's so important for all of us to create a safe place to fly or to fail and to flop, and to help each other up when those things happen. To model ministry, because ministry is what all of us do. And I'm not just being easy and sentimental. I value the word. To minister to someone is to try to meet their needs. This is what the Sunshine Committee does. It is, I'm guilty of this, I say the single most important thing is, and it's religious education and it's music and it's, if we don't have sunshine, whether in the committee form, the label isn't important. The action is important. We minister to each other to let each other know, as Randy shared, that we are not alone. Even if we haven't been a physical presence in the congregation for a while, that we are not alone. The number of people that showed up for Bill Bryant's service tells you, shows you, that we do not forget. That when our people move away, voluntarily or because of a fight, there's still a responsibility to reach out, to pursue with love. When I am in Northern California, I see Tom Cooney. When I'm up in Washington, Oregon, I look for Robin and for Sue Craig. We all do these things. We all try to reach out and keep each other company, to bring the covered dishes and the prayers and ourselves to witness with the most simple, and I'm going to get biblical again, biblical phrase. When God asks all the time in Genesis, where are you? And the answer, with the exception of Adam and Eve, is, Hineni, here I am. And that's what ministers are supposed to model. Here I am. Not with answers, can't fix everything, can't please everyone, but here I am. And that's the model for everyone. When I had a medical crisis about 30 years ago and found myself in an ER and then in an ICU in San Francisco over a weekend that was both Passover and Easter, this is not a good time to try to find a doctor. I want to tell you that we're in a hospital that's called Sinai, and it's Passover. Trying to find a doctor who is Jewish, is, as they say, Sigourney Helfen. It wouldn't have, there's no possibility. And trying to find on the morning of Easter a Christian doctor, it was really an interesting experience that I hope not to repeat. But I was there, and I was intubated, and I could not speak. That's frustrating for anyone, but for clergy, it's worse than the fever and the life-threatening disease. But what I did have was my successor at Star King Church at Hayward, Mark Bellatini, came and sat by my bed and held my hand for 45 minutes. And I cannot tell you what that meant. It wasn't words. It wasn't this guy thing. We got to be able to fix it and solve it. It was touch and company and presence. And that is ministry. And you don't need to be ordained for it. But you have to have the courage. Hard thing for guys. This is really hard for guys. I got to tell you, there's a gender thing here. It's really hard for guys not to have answers, not to know exactly what to do, not to have the magic word or say, well, try this specialist. Or guys think everything should have an answer and we should have that answer. Well, the truth is we don't. Sometimes we're just company. But I use the word just as a really big word. It's an important word. Being company to each other in times of joy and sorrow is ministry. Being present at the great occasions is ministry. Being a part of creating the next generation of ministers, and by generation, I don't mean this in the usual sense, because our ministers come into divinity school. We still call it divinity school. Come into divinity school, although we argue about what in the world that means. We still go to divinity school, not in our 20s for the most part, but in our 30s and 40s and 50s. Because as ministers, most are looking for a life of service, a life that will model what we can be with and for each other. None of us is perfect in this, just as not every sermon is going to be perfect, not every administrative choice and personal choice and counseling choice or suggestion is going to be perfect, but our call is to be straight, to be courageous, to be present. Our association actively supports Harvard, Meadville, Star King, and indirectly with scholarships and with the guidance of our fellowship committee, many other ways into our ministries. And I say ministries plural because it's not, again, the minister is a one-size-fits-all. They're not all pulpit ministries. Some of us are military chaplains. Some of us are community organizers. Some of us are union organizers. One of my great friends back in the 60s was the Unitarian minister chaplain to Cesar Chavez. We are all over the place witnessing the best of our values using the best of our individual gifts. Our gifts are not all the same. Our values are not all the same. But the attempt to speak truth, to breathe life into communities and individuals who are tired, to find a pulse where there doesn't seem to be a pulse, to witness to a world that needs truth spoken to power and truth spoken from the powerless who cannot be heard. The job of the minister is not all the time to be popular. It is not all the time to say the easy thing, the popular thing to do. It's not even the growth of a congregation. Sometimes brave ministers such as Steve Fritchman put his church in peril because of his political positions against Senator Joe McCarthy during the 50s. Some of our churches put their 501c3s in peril and lost them in the anti-war movement and in the civil rights movement. There are times when leadership has to be part of destruction in order to lead to creation. And we don't always know when to hold them and when to fold them and when to walk away and when to run. We don't always know the right moment to take the right direction. But that's the job that our denomination tries to prepare people to do. To be leaders without being bosses. To be speakers without speaking down. To be fellow travelers but with some specialized background. To be, as best they can, as best we can, good company on the trip. This is true of virtually every denomination. It isn't just Unitarian Universalists. Clergy and people are called to have the courage to speak with our breaths, to kiss with our souls, to have a kind of intimacy that is life-giving, life-restoring, and to know that it won't always work, but that it is important that we have the courage to look deeply into ourselves and into each other and know that there is no one whom we would not administer physically and spiritually the kiss of life. That is how great our power, all of our power, is to bring light and life and breath and hope and a future to the people with whom we share this amazing and miraculous journey.